Chapter 4, Love Language Number 1, Words of Affirmation.
Mark Twain once said, "I can live for 2 months on a good compliment." If we take Twain literally, 6 compliments a year would keep his emotional love tank at the operational level. Your spouse will probably need more. One way to express love emotionally is to use words that build up. Solomon, author of the ancient Hebrew wisdom literature, wrote in Proverbs, "An anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up." Verbal compliments, or words of appreciation, are powerful communicators of love. They are best expressed in simple, straightforward statements of affirmation, such as, "You look sharp in that suit." "Do you ever look nice in that dress? Wow! I really appreciate your washing the dishes tonight." "Thanks for getting the babysitter lined up tonight. I want you to know, I don't take that for granted." What would happen to the emotional climate of a marriage if the husband and wife heard such words of affirmation regularly? Giving verbal compliments is only one way to express words of affirmation to your spouse. Another dialect is encouraging words. The word encourage means to inspire courage. All of us have areas in which we feel insecure. We lack courage, and that lack of courage often hinders us from accomplishing the positive things we would like to do. The latent potential within your spouse may await your encouraging words. Allison had always liked to write. Late in her college career, she took a few courses in journalism. She quickly realized that her excitement about writing exceeded her interest in history, which had been her academic major. It was too late to change majors, but after college, and especially before the first baby, she wrote several articles. She submitted one article to a magazine, but when she received a rejection slip, she never had the courage to submit another. Now that the children were older and she had more time to contemplate, Allison was again writing. Keith, Allison's husband, had paid little attention to Allison's writing in the early days of their marriage. He was busy with his own vocation and caught up in the pressure of climbing the corporate ladder. In time, however, Keith had realized that life's deepest meaning is not found in accomplishments, but in relationships. He had learned to give more attention to Allison and her interest. So it was quite natural one night for him to pick up one of Allison's articles and read it. When he finished, he went into the den where Allison was reading a book. With great enthusiasm, he said, "I hate to interrupt your reading, but I have to tell you this. I just finished reading your article on making the most of the holidays. Allison, you are an excellent writer. This stuff ought to be published. You write clearly. Your words paint pictures that I can visualize. You have a fascinating style. You have to submit this stuff to some magazines." "Do you really think so?" Allison asked hesitantly. "I know so," Keith said. "I'm telling you, this is good." When Keith left the room, Allison did not resume her reading. With the closed book in her lap, she dreamed for 30 minutes about what Keith had said. She wondered if others would view her writing the same way he did. She remembered the rejection slip she had received years ago, but she reasoned that she was a different person now. Her writing was better. She had had more experiences. Before she left the chair to get a drink of water, Allison had made a decision. She would submit her articles to some magazines. She would see if they could be published. Keith's encouraging words were spoken 14 years ago. Allison has had numerous articles published since then and now has a book contract. She is an excellent writer, but it took the encouraging words from her husband to inspire her to take the first step in the long process of getting an article published. Perhaps your spouse has untapped potential in one or more areas of life. That potential may be awaiting your encouraging words. Perhaps she needs to enroll in a course to develop that potential. Maybe he needs to meet some people who have succeeded in that area who can give him insight on the next step he needs to take. Your words may give your spouse the courage necessary to take that first step. Encouragement requires empathy and seeing the world from your spouse's perspective. We must first learn what is important to our spouse Only then can we give encouragement. With verbal encouragement, we are trying to communicate the ideas, I know, I care, I'm with you, how can I help? We are trying to show that we believe in him and in his abilities. We are giving credit and praise. Two other types of affirming words are kind words and humble words. With kind words, we say words of love in a kindly tone, keeping in mind that the same sentence can have two different meanings depending on how you say it. The statement, I love you, when said with kindness and tenderness, can be a genuine expression of love. But what about the statement, I love you? The questioning voice changes the whole meaning of those three words. Sometimes our words are saying one thing, but our tone of voice is saying another. Kind words do not include a sarcastic tone. When we use humble words, we are honoring a basic truth about loving words. Love makes requests, not demands. When I demand things from my spouse, I become a parent, and she the child. Of course, if we wish to love each other, we need to know what the other person wants. To develop an intimate relationship, we need to know each other's desires. The way we express those desires, however, is all important. If they come across as demands, we have erased the possibility of intimacy and will drive away our spouse. If, however, we make known our needs and desires as requests, we are giving guidance, not ultimatums. The husband who says, you know those apple pies you make? Would it be possible for you to make one this week? I love those apple pies. Is giving his wife guidance on how to love him and thus build intimacy. On the other hand, the husband who says, haven't had an apple pie since the baby was born. Don't guess I'll get any more apple pies for 18 years. Has ceased being an adult and has reverted to adolescent behavior. Such demands do not build intimacy. A request introduces the element of choice. Your mate may choose to respond to your request or to deny it, because love is always a choice. That's what makes it meaningful. Words of affirmation are one of the five basic love languages. Within that language, however, there are many dialects. We have discussed a few already, encouraging words, kind words, humble words, and there are many more. All of the dialects have in common the use of words to affirm one's spouse. Psychologist William James said that possibly the deepest human need is the need to feel appreciated. Words of affirmation will meet that need in many individuals. If you are not a man or woman of words, if it is not your primary love language, but you think it may be the love language of your spouse, let me suggest that you keep a notebook entitled Words of Affirmation. When you read a title or book on love, record the words of affirmation you find. When you hear a lecture on love, or you overhear a friend saying something positive about another person, write it down. In time, you will collect quite a list of words to use in communicating love to your spouse. You may also want to try giving indirect words of affirmation. That is, saying positive things about your spouse when he or she is not present. Eventually, someone will tell your spouse, and you will get full credit for love. Tell your wife's mother how great your wife is. When her mother tells her what you said, it will be amplified, and you will get even more credit. Also, affirm your spouse in front of others when he or she is present. I learned an important lesson about words of affirmation and love languages in Little Rock, Arkansas. My visit with Bill and Betty Jo was on a beautiful spring day. They lived in a cluster home with white picket fence, green grass, and spring flowers in full bloom. It was idyllic. Once inside, however, I discovered that the idealism ended. Their marriage was in shambles. 12 years and 2 children after the wedding day, they wondered why they had married in the first place. They seemed to disagree on everything. The only thing they really agreed on was that they both loved the children. As the story unraveled, my observation was that Bill was a workaholic who had little time left over for Betty Jo. Betty Jo worked part-time, mainly to get out of the house. Their method of coping was withdrawal. They tried to put distance between themselves so that their conflicts would not seem as large. But the gauge on both love tanks read empty. I spent an hour with each of them separately and listened intently to both stories. I discovered that in spite of the emptiness of their relationship and their many disagreements, they appreciated certain things about each other. Bob acknowledged, "She's a good mother. She also is a good housekeeper and an excellent cook when she chooses to cook. But," he continued, "there is simply no affection coming from her. I work my tail off, and there's simply no appreciation." In my conversation with Betty Jo, she agreed that Bill was an excellent provider. "But," she complained, "he does nothing around the house to help me, and he never has time for me. What's the use of having the house, the recreational vehicle, and all the other things, if you don't ever get to enjoy them together?" With that information, I decided to focus my advice by making only one suggestion to each of them. I told Bob and Betty Jo separately that each one held the key to changing the emotional climate of the marriage. "That key," I said, "is to express verbal appreciation for the things you like about the other person, and for the moment, suspending your complaints about the things you don't like." We reviewed the positive comments they had already made about each other and helped each of them write a list of those positive traits. We made the list as specific as possible. Betty Jo's list had 11 items, and Bill's list had 9 items. I suggested that they add to the list things they noticed in the weeks ahead. I also suggested that twice a week they select one positive trait and express verbal appreciation for it to the spouse. I gave one further guideline. I told Betty Jo that if Bill happened to give her a compliment, she was not to give him a compliment at the same time, but rather, she should simply receive it and say, "Thank you for saying that." I told Bill the same thing. I encouraged them to do that every week for 2 months. And if they found it helpful, they could continue. If the experiment did not help the emotional climate of the marriage, then they could write it off as another failed attempt. 2 months later, I called them back, wondering what had happened. I spoke with each of them individually. I was amazed to find that Bill's attitude had taken a giant step forward. He had guessed that I had given Betty Jo the same advice I'd given him, but that was all right. He loved it. She was expressing appreciation for his hard work and his provision for the family. "She has actually made me feel like a man again. We've got a ways to go, Dr. Chapman, but I really believe we're on the road." When I talked to Betty Jo, however, I found that she had only taken a baby step forward. She appreciated the verbal compliments, but she said, "He is still so busy at work that we never have time together." As I listened to Betty Jo, the lights came on. I knew that I had made a significant discovery. The love language of one person is not necessarily the love language of another. It was obvious that Bill's primary love language was words of affirmation. He was a hard worker, and he enjoyed his work, but what he wanted most from his wife was expressions of appreciation for his work. Betty Jo, on the other hand, was emotionally crying out for something else. Positive words were fine, but her deep emotional longing is for something else.
This is the end of Disc 1. The program continues on Disc 2.